Good morning, everyone. It is Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th, 2021. Welcome to the ADK Homeroom. I am your host, Frank. This is your home away from homeroom. It is my home away from homeroom. Yesterday, I had to cancel a trip with my academic team, and I guess that just goes to show you, don't let anybody tell you that there is no cost to masking kids, right? I'm out of the classroom this year because of the mandated mask rules, even though I'm fully vaccinated. And as a result, we haven't been able to do well. I haven't been able to teach my classes at all. And then even the academic teams that I've been coaching and trying to keep limping along haven't been able to go to any tournaments yet this year. There is a steep, steep cost to forcing kids into masks. Anyway, it is Pearl Harbor Day, a day when it is always good to remember freedom, what America has stood for, and what America will hopefully continue to stand for going forward. And that's part of our topic today, a big part of our topic today, when we're going to talk about the worst black swan. Evergrande, Chinese property company, great, great example of what we're talking about. So innovation, freedom, the worst black swan. So for those of you who don't know, what is Evergrande? Well, it's a Chinese real estate property development company. It is number 122 on the Fortune 500 list, founded back in 1986. Ah, what an innocent time we were back in 1986 with our flannels and our grunge and our local internet providers and our AOL. You've got mail. Remember when people used to get so excited to get email? It was like, you know what I think it was? I think it was everybody had grown up in, you know, the post-World War II halcyon days of America, and there was nothing better than going to the mailbox and getting a letter, right? That was great. Get a letter from your cousin in the mailbox. You get something in the mailbox that wasn't a bill because you're a kid or whatever. That was awesome, and that's kind of shows you how far we've come to today versus then. That was like the highlight of a childhood day, getting a letter, and then AOL comes out in the 90s. Oh, you've got mail. Oh, people were so excited just to get some email. How innocent we were. How innocent we were. Now we're all wishing we got less email per day, right? So that's when Evergrande was founded, a property development company. They basically sell, like, you know, mid-market and upscale market apartments in high rises and in low rises all throughout the Pacific Rim over there. And interestingly, right, in 2016, Andrew Left was banned from trading in Hong Kong in the stock market because of his attacks on Evergrande. And if you're not sure who Andrew Left is, he's this guy. He started Stock Lemon right around the original dot-com bubble, and then it was rebranded into Citron Research or Citron something. Basically, he's the guy who investigates companies, and he arguably does a great service. And he investigates companies, and he says, "Oh, this country's failing. This company is failing. This company's in horrible shape. We need to short this company." And then he shorts their stock, and he tries to convince all kinds of other people to short their stock, and he drums up all kinds of hate or doubt or fear or trepidation about a given corporation, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Andrew Left, of course, was maybe not directly targeted, but he was in a uncomfortable position last January when GameStop. He was one of the people who had shorted GameStop and recommended shorting GameStop, just like everybody else. And then Wall Street Bets and the Redditors and the We Can Be Retarded Longer Than You Can Be Solvent Brigade came through and made them pay. But Andrew Left arguably does provide a service identifying sick companies or companies practicing fraud, companies that aren't being honest in their reporting. And he targeted Evergrande. And in true financial socialist fashion, the CCP, acting through Hong Kong, banned him from Hong Kong trading back in 2016 because of his attacks and exposure of Evergrande. And lo, 5 years later, it has come to pass. Evergrande is about $300 billion in debt, and they can't pay it back. So that's the situation here. You've got, and this is the example we're going to use for discussing innovation, freedom, and the worst black swan is your Evergrande company. So that's the background in it. It's a property development company, and it is $300 billion in debt, and it can't pay all of that back. Here's ABC News yesterday, I think, on the Evergrande situation. ABC News says, China's central bank expanded the supply of money for lending as Beijing tried to reassure its public and investors the economy can be protected if a troubled real estate developer's $310 billion mountain of debt collapses. And then ABC News went on to say Evergrande Group's struggle to turn assets into cash has prompted a fear that default might chill Chinese lending markets, cause global shockwaves. Economists say the ruling Communist Party can prevent a credit crunch, but it wants to avoid sending the wrong signal by bailing out Evergrande in the middle of a campaign to force companies to cut Beijing, to cut debt that Beijing worries is dangerously high. So, what does that all that mean? Well, it means that Evergrande owes a lot of money, and the CCP sort of caused this themselves, right? Last year, the CCP changed their rules for how much debt people or companies, corporations there rather, would be allowed to have and would be allowed to use to finance their growth. So after changing the rules last year, the CCP sort of created their own mess. And now Evergrande can't cover all of the payments that it owes on its debt. If you look at some telling quotes from, for example, at Peking University's HSBC Business School, you have He Fan, an economist professor there. He says that Evergrande must be punished. That's a quote. Evergrande must be punished. And, you know, he doesn't want to get the Jack Ma Peng Shui disappearance treatment. So he's obviously speaking the party line. Nobody no one with a loud voice over there speaks anything but the party line. So China has decided, the CCP, the Communist Party in China, has decided that these corporations can't have this much debt. It's worryingly high, as ABC News put it. So what did they do yesterday? Well, they did lower the reserves that banks had to have on hand, and that has the effect of freeing up a lot of money, making lending easier, credit easier to get. So that will ease that credit crunch. And you might say, well, there, see, the CCP is bailing out Evergrande. No, that's really not a bailout for Evergrande. That's just trying to get the market ready for a collapse of Evergrande. That is, and here's my point about innovation and freedom, and I've been making this point on the podcast the last several days, is that China is really being far more economically capitalist, far more economically free than the United States over the last three decades. It is going to let the markets punish Evergrande. The United States, of course, famously has not allowed its biggest companies to be punished by the market. General Motors and all the investment banks back in 2008 that received government assistance really should not have. Chrysler, too. They should not have. they should have been allowed to fail. This idea of too big to fail is a very socialist idea, and the United States has been more socialist over the last three decades when it comes to economics rather than, you know, political and free speech concerns. The United States has been economically more socialist than China over the last three decades. Really can't dispute that. And Evergrande is a case in point of that. It is a perfect example of China. I've been saying that people thought that China was going to bail out Evergrande. And I said, I don't know. And there's still, I could still be wrong. China could still come back and say, hey, all right, it's looking grim. We're going to bail you out. But it doesn't look that way. It looks like they are preparing for the company to be punished, as Heifan put it. And that's how it should be. That's how it should be. So, what does this mean? Why are we talking about Evergrande in terms of innovation, freedom, and the worst black swan? Well, the point is that innovation and freedom go together, right? China has had this tremendously economic free, economic freedom policy over the last three decades, and that is what has allowed them to innovate, to lead the world in manufacturing, to develop all kinds of new systems, new products, financial products, and otherwise that have propelled its growth to be number one in the world by far over the last three decades. Matt Ridley has a book. He came out in 2020. It's called How Innovation Works and Why It Flourishes in Freedom. And you might know Matt Ridley, of course, because his book from 2021 is with Alina Chan. It's called Viral, and it's about the COVID origins. So in 2020, Matt Ridley's book was about how innovation is flourishing in China because of the increased freedom. Right, he points out that the Chinese entrepreneur is freer despite the monopolistic and authoritarian political regime because the bureaucracy, the regulation that plagues U.S. businesses is largely absent in China. Matt says that an entrepreneur in China, if you go out and you want to build a factory, you want to make a vending machine that's directly connected to a cell phone, so you can just type in a few buttons on your cell phone and the vending machine spits out your Tylenol or your Junior Mints, and then it's just the price of it's just added to your cell phone. An entrepreneur or business person can just do that in a matter of weeks, according to Ridley. Whereas, of course, in the United States, that would take at least a year or something to start that up. So the point is that the innovation there in China is much easier because of the lack of regulation. And that leads you to, well, let me just point out that this is a bit like the middle school volleyball syndrome right there, right? Remember, middle school volleyball syndrome is talking about when you focus on just the little details instead of the big picture, right? If you go to a middle school volleyball game, you see that every single point is decided by the serve one way or the other, almost every single point, right? Either the serve's an ace or the serve is out of bounds. Almost every single point goes that way. There's hardly ever a rally. And yet, if you go to a middle school volleyball practice, it always amazes me. They work on bumping and setting and all these other things, and they work on the serve, which decides 90% of middle school volleyball game points. They work on the serve for like 15% of their practice time. So middle school volleyball syndrome here, right, in regards to studying innovation and freedom, is when you look at things like another Matt Ridley thing. He talks about, you know, Sam Langley, right, in 1903, and Sam Langley was working with or for the U.S. government, and his plane went crashing into the Potomac. Whereas the Wright brothers, working independently, working more freely, they got their plane off the ground. But that's a little bit of middle school volleyball syndrome, looking at details like that, because my goodness, folks, all you have to do is just look at the big picture of history. Humanity was mired in this swamp of no progress, of constant stagnation for millennia, right? Ever since history began, since writing began 6,000 some years ago, there was very, very, very little progress. There was some, but very little progress. And then what happened? Enlightenment. People discovered freedom. People discovered capitalism. And since the Enlightenment, right, what do we have? We have Xboxes, we have the internet, we have antibiotics, got railroads, got modern stock markets, air conditioning, genetically modified food, anesthesia, surgery, basically the entire medical profession. There really wasn't much point to the medical profession before a couple hundred years ago, right? Child mortality went down from 50% before age 5 in the year 1800 to the crazy low numbers that it is now, a point where people can't even imagine what it is like to have a coin flip on whether your precious child lives past the age of 5. And that's really all you need, right, to see that there is a very strong correlation between freedom and innovation. I would say causation, but we're not going to try to prove that right now. There's certainly an obvious correlation right there. And looking at little things like Sam Langley, and yes, even Evergrande, that's a little bit of middle school volleyball syndrome. So the thing is, this is where the worst black swan comes in, because people forget. Just because freedom and innovation go hand in hand does not mean that innovation cannot occur where there is relatively less freedom, where there is what we would consider oppression, right? So think about, compared to what we have now, everything, right, before the Renaissance, and even a lot of the Renaissance, was horrifically oppressive. This was a brutal time. You had people torturing animals for fun, right? You had bear baiting outside the Globe for Shakespeare. You had a little bit later, but you had cat burning on stage, right? Before Molière, before all kinds of French plays, they would put a bag of cats on fire on stage, and that was your entertainment. Woohoo! Yay! Isn't that great? I mean, it was an unbelievably brutal time and horrifically oppressive. Louis the 14th, right? Le roi soleil, the sun king. L'état c'est moi. He thought he was the state. If you weren't royalty, you were the royalty's property. I mean, in women, you were property no matter what. Slavery was everywhere. It was a tremendously oppressive time compared to now. Yet there was innovation. Was there not? There was. So just because you're saying that freedom and innovation go hand in hand doesn't mean that there cannot be innovation where there is no freedom. Flying shuttle invented in the early 1700s. I guess that's, you know, post-Renaissance, just barely. Flying shuttle was a huge innovation, if you're not aware of that, in looms, in weaving. And no reason it could not have been invented earlier either. It's really interesting. It's like role-playing games. Anyway, gunpowder, right? Cannon, clocks, the scientific method. Galileo was under house arrest for following the science. Just for inventing the scientific method and following it to its logical conclusions about planets and stars and being honest about that. He got put under house arrest. Very oppressive compared to our standards now, and yet there was some progress made. Not nearly as much, right? If you compare the time periods from, say, the classical golden age of Greece, 400 BC up until, you know, 1700 AD, you compare that, the pace of progress over that time, obviously, it was much slower compared to what happened after freedom and after the Enlightenment. Freedom allowed innovation to take off, but you do not have to have that freedom to have that innovation. That pace of innovation, yeah, but you can get a breakthrough without it, right? And sometimes people say, oh, look, innovation and freedom don't go hand in hand, because look at China. China invented gunpowder, but that's, you know, that's foolishly projecting from today's world, because A, China and Europe, China and the West were really about equivalent in freedom back then. And B, as I've been saying, just because freedom and innovation are positively correlated doesn't mean that innovation can't occur in a more oppressive culture. And that right there, folks, that is the worst black swan. The worst black swan is this idea that even though it's less likely that a major technological breakthrough would happen under a totalitarian, horrific concentration camp type of government, it is possible, right? It's very possible that some big brother, mind-crushing, soul-burning regime will make a huge technological advance. We've been lucky so far in some sense, right? So far since the Enlightenment, this really hasn't happened. The freest companies have dominated virtually every major advancement, right? But it doesn't mean it has to be that way. There have been advances in places like the Soviet Union, right? The tokamak fusion design, the Siberian snake for magnetic confinement of the plasma in a fusion reactor, that was a Soviet innovation. And that's now one of the leading candidates for fusion that everybody's talking about and has generated, hundreds of millions of dollars in venture capital over the last couple of years. That was a Soviet invention, the tokamak design for magnetic confinement of the plasma in a fusion device. Lev Landau, Soviet physicist, great Soviet physicist, won the Nobel Prize for describing superfluids, right? Sputnik, obviously. But the thing is, nothing like that was like the nuclear bomb. And yes, the United States did get to the nuclear bomb first because of freedom. All of the minds from overseas came fleeing to the United States. And Heisenberg was still in Germany. And Germany wasn't super close with Heisenberg there, but it really wasn't inconceivable that they would have gotten there first and had the nuclear bomb. Von Braun, of course, in Operation Paperclip demonstrates that point too. The German rocket technology was really ahead of the more free United States, the more free ally side in World War II. But it is true, since the Enlightenment, the West has won out, and the side of freedom has won out in innovation time and time and time again. And this is, as they say, this is a results-based service. And the results were, even though that it was maybe a little close, and even though that it was based on minds from overseas, in part, in minds from overseas coming to the United States, nuclear bombs were first in the West. So the statist countries had a chance, smaller chance, but they really at inventing the nuclear bomb, but they didn't. And nothing. The statist innovations since the Enlightenment really haven't amounted to anything like the nuclear bomb, nothing like the airplane, nothing like the internet, nothing like anesthesia, the antibiotics. But at some point, you got to expect that worst black swan to happen, even though it's more likely for innovation to occur under freedom. At some point, you have to think, well, if it's not impossible, then it'll happen eventually. And can you imagine if the first general artificial intelligence is a North Korean invention? Can you imagine if the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP of China, the people in charge of the Uyghur concentration camps, if they're the first ones to perfect eternal youth or some sort of genetic Superman therapy? Can you imagine if somewhere like Cuba invents the biowarfare plague that is a militaristic leap or a leap in military technology equivalent to the leap from chemical bombs to nuclear bombs, right? Can you imagine that maybe the Chinese Communist Party develops some space technology, and when you look up at the moon, all of a sudden, and next to the CHA up there, you see a hammer and a sickle. The CHA is from The Tick, right? If you don't watch The Tick, go back and watch The Tick. Spoon! All right, so these innovations are not impossible, and that's the worst black swan. The worst black swan is that an oppressive regime makes this giant leap in innovation and puts themselves head and shoulders above the rest of the world, similar to the way that the nuclear bomb did for the West after World War II, or similar to the way that the internet could have if the US wanted to militarize it. And had pressed its advantage there in the waning years of the 20th century. All right, so that begs the question, how do you keep it from happening, right? If it's not even that much of a black swan, right? There's a definite chance that this is going to happen. It is non-negligible. It's not trivial. We've seen advancements under oppressive regimes. China has even been walking this thin line between an oppressive regime politically and being very free capitalist, being very free economically, which is making it even more likely that an innovation like this will happen in a terrible, vile regime like the CCP. So it's not even that much of a black swan. It's like a gray swan, right? How do you keep it from happening? You can't forever, but as Arnold Schwarzenegger says in Conan, do you want to live forever, right? I mean, the current regime, the current phase space of civilization, is not going to remain the same forever. We're talking maybe a few hundred years before something's going to happen, either probably revolutionary general artificial intelligence or else some sort of catastrophic regression. So seems more likely than not, right? Over the next couple hundred years, we'll get some sort of fundamental change. So you really only need to make it a few hundred years. And that's certainly possible, to go a couple hundred years without having this crazy leap under an oppressive regime. And what's the best way to prevent it? Well, to stack the odds in your favor. And that means you have to be super free. That means you have to be extremely capitalist. That means you have to be breakneck pace, standing behind history, cracking your whip, saying faster, faster. Think of William F. Buckley Jr., right? He founded National Review magazine saying that he wanted to stand athwart history, yelling, stop. Well, no. If we want to stay ahead of the game, if we want to stack the odds in favor of freedom and in favor of all the attendant benefits that come with that, and again, I talk about middle school volleyball syndrome, and if you don't understand the attendant benefits of freedom, just cast your eyes back over the last couple centuries. It should be clearly obvious. It should be as obvious as the importance of a serve in middle school volleyball game that freedom has brought tremendous, tremendous advantages and wonderful changes in the world over the last couple hundred of years. So if you want to secure the benefits of freedom to yourselves and posterity, ha ha ha, I guess it really is Pearl Harbor Day, an American day. So if you do want to secure those benefits, then you need to go super free, right? You need to make your policy as capitalist as possible. And that's stacking the odds in your favor, because then the odds are, it's no guarantee, but the odds are that the innovations will be happening on the side of freedom. The more similar you make the governments, the more similar you make, the more convergence you have between a socialist United States and a socialist China, the more similar it is, the more likely it is that an innovation could occur on either side rather than one side. The side that is much more free will be much more likely to get all of the innovations for itself. And that would be wonderful if they're on the side of freedom, because if the innovations do occur on the side of oppression, then, once that country gets a big advantage over another country, it's all over. It's all over. They're not going to continue to innovate. The oppressive regimes, they don't care about innovation. They just want power. They just want control. It's an evolutionary need. It's a drive that is probably atavistic in nature. It is deeply ingrained in your circuit brain. And once they have that, then the world will shut down because they're not interested in innovation. They're just interested in innovation as a means of dominance, as a means to this end of preeminence. That evolutionary need to control one's environment. So the best way to stop that shutdown, because once they get domination, they're not going to care about innovation. They're just going to shut everything down and coast once they have no one to compete with. So the best way to stop that, again, is to improve your own freedom. So go out there, vote accordingly, make policies accordingly, go to a boardroom. The world is being decided based on meetings in boardrooms. If you don't want to go and have your kid go on the battlefield in a couple of decades, you need to go to the boardroom now, right? Fight there now so that your kid doesn't have to fight in the battlefield in a couple of decades. And we've seen, I hope we remember Pearl Harbor. I hope we remember how terrible battlefields are. That's going to do it for today, folks. Find me on Twitter, ADK Homeroom. Find me in Substack, adkhomeroom.substack.com. Take care.